Welcome to Trial Lawyer View, the podcast dedicated to the fierce yet compassionate lawyers who fight every day for justice in the courtroom. Our guests are top trial lawyers and their firms who share their stories and experiences, offering valuable insights into their journey, as well as expert guests who provide actionable strategies and practical tips for personal injury lawyers looking to optimize their operations, enhance client service, and drive growth in their practices. Trial Lawyer View is brought to you by Synergy. At Synergy, we aren't just a service provider. We are a strategic partner for personal injury law firms, seamlessly integrating with law firms to boost efficiency from day one. Outsourcing cumbersome administrative tasks like lien resolution and Medicare compliance to an expert partner like Synergy enables personal injury firms to focus on what they do best.
Welcome to the Trial Lawyer View podcast. Today, we are lucky to have Norman Clark, an established strategist in the field of law firm management. Norman co-founded Walker Clark LLC and currently serves as its managing principal, where he brings over five decades of profound experience across various facets of the legal profession. His expertise spans international business and legal practice strategy, risk management, partnership governance, and profitability enhancement. Norman's long career has seen him at the helm of an 800-lawyer global legal services organization, where he pioneered the application of quality management principles and leveraged technology to revolutionize legal service delivery on a global scale. A respected author and sought-after speaker, Norman has contributed extensively to the field, including publications on law firm governance, business development, and sustainable profitability amidst market disruptions. Norman's academic journey includes earning his JD from the Thomas R. Klein School of Law and an LLM focusing on law, psychiatry, and criminology from the George Washington University Law School. His career also includes distinguished service as a judge advocate in the U.S. Navy and leadership roles in prominent legal management consultancy firms. Today, we'll tap into his deep expertise and experience related to profitability, financial performance of personal injury law firms, and diagnosing issues within a PI law practice. Norman, welcome to Trial Lawyer View. Thank you for taking the time to be here with me today.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. I'm really looking forward to our discussion. It promises to be very interesting.
Yeah, me too. So in the super ultra competitive market of personal injury law, what key financial performance measurements do you believe are most indicative of a firm's profitability, health, and why?
Well, when we turn to profitability, particularly focusing on a small specialized law firm like plaintiff's personal injury, usually the best sources for better profitability are inside the firm rather than out in the market. As you and I know, driving along highways in Florida, the market is saturated with personal injury lawyers. About every third billboard down here in Southwest Florida is for a PI firm. So you can't simply raise your fees enough to ensure profitability. The market won't let us. And the lowest price marketing strategy that some people try usually is self-defeating, because not only are you more likely to lose money on clients with very little potential for repeat business, but all it takes for a competitor to destroy your strategic advantage is to offer a fee that is 1% or $1 or 1 euro lower, and you've lost your strategic advantage. So we look at the six factors or drivers that have the greatest impact on profitability of any law practice, and some of them with particular emphasis for personal injury firms. And these are pricing, you know, the fees, productivity, how much billable work do you do, realization, which I'll talk about in just a minute, cost management, personnel costs, and leverage. Now, each of these can be measured to a high degree of precision. But in personal injury practices especially, our experience has been that realization rate is probably the most important measurement because of its strong and reliable diagnostic capabilities. It can lead us to the root causes of unsatisfactory profitability because it helps us answer the question, why are we not getting paid for all the work that we do for the client? Other measurements are important, and we can talk about those, of course, but in practices like litigation, and particularly personal injury, where each matter can present different and sometimes apparently unpredictable impacts on the work that you have to do for the client, realization is the most important from the diagnostic point of view. And so this is where we'd like to begin. In any firm that's having problems with profitability, the realization rate. And one of the things that we suggest to all law firms is that occasionally, maybe once a quarter, the partners sit down, look at the write-offs for the past quarter and the write-downs, and try to identify the reasons for each one. Because usually it is a relatively small number of causes that can produce the disproportionate impact on realization and profitability. For example, we found that in most firms, approximately 20% more or less of the causes of poor realization will often account for approximately 80% of the write-offs. And usually, once you find these root causes, they can be addressed relatively quickly and inexpensively once they're identified. Taking realization as an example, we can really dig down much more deeply into some of the operations of the firm, and we find that the reason for the poor realization and the lack of profitability can often be something very simple. Once we find out, we can usually address it. So, as you'll see during our discussion today, I'm a real fanatic about realization. That's usually the best place to start.
So, if a law firm is trying to diagnose what's going on in terms of their practice, or even maybe they don't have a profitability problem, but want to keep a close eye on these types of metrics, what do you recommend in terms of looking at to continually, you know, and on what is important in terms of the operation of the business?
Well, let's use realization as an example, as a case study. As we know, there are three types of realization in law firms. Recording realization of all the work that we do for a client, how much of it actually gets recorded. Billing realization of all the work that we record, how much actually gets billed. And the way that you compute billing realization in a fixed fee matter, such as a contingent fee or a flat fee, is a little more complex than in an hourly rate matter, but the basic principle is the same. How much of our work gets written off even before we put it on a bill? And then collection realization, which is the easiest to assess, and that's of all the work that we bill, how much gets paid. Now, when I said that realization has diagnostic capabilities, once you have indicated your realization rates are not what you want, let's say your realization rates are below 90%, then that usually leads you to a relatively limited number of possible causes. And this is where the diagnostic power comes in. We always say, look at the numbers for what they tell you about the causes of the problem. And realization is a good example. For example, we found that if your billing realization is not what it should be, however you define that measurement, there are usually four causes. And the reason will be usually one of these four diagnostic hypotheses. Inadequate knowledge or skills on the part of the fee earners. It could be inadequate knowledge of the practice management systems and the knowledge management systems in the firm. People are spending time generating documents that already exist, unnecessarily time-consuming or inefficient internal processes in the preparation and delivery of a client service, or inadequate communication within the firm of the purpose, scope, and expectations concerning the tasks to be performed by the fee earners. Now, it's not always one of these four, but in most cases it is. And so that opens the door to a diagnostic path to get down to the root cause of the problem. And collection realization, which is usually the more obvious problem, usually leads to one of five hypotheses. It's due to preventable errors in the billing process, or secondly, possibly weaknesses in the firm's policies and practices concerning timely billing and collections. It could be client dissatisfaction of the results of the engagement. That's one of my favorites because you'll have the client, you never ask the client how you're doing or how things are going, and you don't find out about the client because you don't ask. You don't find out about the client's satisfaction until you present the invoice. And then they tell you how unhappy they are. But that could be one of them. Vulnerabilities in the firm's credit risk assessment practices when accepting a new client. And in the PI world, on the plaintiff's side, it's vulnerabilities in the assessment of whether this case is worth taking on. And weak risk management practices to detect and respond promptly to changes in the client's financial position. That's usually not as important in personal injury litigation, but it could sometimes be a factor. So these are the diagnostic doorways that can open to you once you take a look at the numbers and ask why.
So before the podcast started, we were talking a little bit about outsourcing, and I know that you've done some research study into this, and that seems to be a fertile and growing area for personal injury law firms to maximize efficiency and profitability in areas where administrative tasks can be outsourced to third-party experts, and then that cost being passed along as a client cost ultimately, so the firm reduces overhead. Our practice, lien resolution, is a good example of that. What were your positions on that after looking at the viability of outsourcing?
In 2021, several people and I co-authored a book, Outsourcing of Core Legal Service Functions, which was published by Global Law and Business in London. And we explored outsourcing in three different areas: IP outsourcing, document management and review, and cybersecurity, to look at three different areas that would be analogous to what most firms experience. The advantages of outsourcing and their effect on profitability can be very dramatic, and we recommend to our clients that they consider outsourcing possibilities. Now, there are a couple things happening. First of all, the move to outsourcing is certainly consistent with what we're seeing in the most profitable law firms in all practice areas, in all jurisdictions, and particularly in small and mid-sized firms. Over the past 10 years, we've seen a subtle shift, but a significant one, in the basic operating model of law firms. You know, traditionally, the law firm was like a factory. They designed, prepared, and delivered the legal product or service to the client almost entirely in-house. And there was an assumption, a paradigm actually, that to ensure the lowest cost and highest quality, the firm had to do everything themselves. The model that's been emerging over the past 10 years, and particularly since the pandemic, has been that of the shipyard. The law firm outsources administrative, operational, and even some functions that traditionally had been considered part of the practice of the law to external service providers. They gather all these supplies, if you will, and then fashion them together in a way that meets the specific needs and expectations of the client. And in the book, we outlined what is basically a data-driven methodology to determine what, if anything, should be outsourced. And we suggest that law firms look at operations from several perspectives, such as which tasks are taking the most time? Can an outsourced provider do them faster? Where are we dealing with the greatest amount of allocated operating costs in-house? Could those be outsourced? Which ones pose the greatest risk to quality? Many outsourced service providers can demonstrate that they can provide the same service at a better quality than a firm can because they're more focused on that particular function than the general practice of law. And so we suggest that in analyzing the profitability and looking for opportunities to lower the costs of the service, a firm has to look at that and identify those specific areas that would provide the lowest cost and, as a result, better client satisfaction and better quality. And that's another thing, too, client satisfaction. One of our clients is an in-house counsel in a firm in South America, and they use outsourced patent research. And the thing that they're delighted about is it's much faster than what they used to get from the law firm right down the street from them. Because, again, the outsourced provider is focused. So it's something that certainly needs to be considered because the paradigm in what goes into making a legal service and delivering it to a client, that paradigm has shifted.
Since we're talking about outsourcing and profitability, I wanted to ask you, in your book, Sustainable Profitability in a Disrupted Legal Market, you discuss strategies for enhancing law firm profitability. What advice would you give to personal injury firms aiming to sustain profitability amidst all these market disruptions and competitive pressures that are particular to the PI space?
I think it comes back to having the right measurements in place. Because unless you have data upon which to assess what the problems are, you're really guessing. You're guessing based on perhaps episodic evidence. You may be making your decisions based on paradigms that are no longer applicable and might even be counterproductive. So it really comes back to having the measurements and using them. Now, what's interesting is that the measurements that we're talking about are ones that most law firms in any practice area already have sitting around in a database or sitting around in a spreadsheet someplace. But it's actually taking them out and looking at them and asking, what do these measurements tell us? So I would start with the measurements, making sure you can measure each one of those six drivers of law firm profitability.
Turning to quality management and, you know, the evolution of technology, what do you see in terms of the future for leveraging technology to improve financial performance and profitability in law firms, especially obviously in the PI space? You know, obviously we've got AI now kind of changing landscapes dramatically in certain areas. And a little problematic, I think, in law. You know, there's been some instances with people trying to create briefs using ChatGPT that makes up cases, which obviously is a bit problematic. But I'm curious because I do see that there's going to be probably significant changes in terms of the delivery of services based on how technology is evolving.
There are. I've seen really two impacts, one of which is still developing. The first one, going back to this obsession that I have with measurement, is that the technological capabilities we have today, particularly with respect to data management, and the low cost of those capabilities makes it much easier to develop and collect and analyze the data that we need to make wise decisions. When I started out working in the total quality management field in the early 90s, an analysis and the type of projections that I used to do in those days would take days, usually based on nothing more sophisticated than a simple spreadsheet. That information and that analysis can now be produced in minutes, making it much easier and also at a much lower cost than formally applied. So that's the first impact. We can get the information we need to make the strategic and operational decisions we need much more easily than even 10 years ago. The second area that I see, and this is where ChatGPT and all the other AI tools and applications are just beginning to emerge, is productivity. We're already seeing some significant advances in the productivity of fee earners in law firms of all descriptions. And so we need to ask, what does this explosion of capability, what does it mean for the firm and its financial performance? And what does it mean to us individually? For example, here's a thought experiment. What would it mean to your firm's financial performance if you could improve the overall chargeable work productivity of the lawyers by 10 times? And when I pose that, a lot of people say, yeah, 10 times, that's completely unreasonable. We're talking probably more like 20 times or even 40 times improvement in productivity. But let's go with 10 times. This is already happening in some firms. It's already being measured. We're already beginning to see the impacts on the turnaround times for certain tasks. We're also seeing the impact in terms of staffing requirements being reduced. But what would this mean? Let's use 10 times for the thought. If you have four associates who work for you, in as little as 2 years, what would happen if their output of legal work increased to the equivalent of 40 associates? You know, what would that mean for the staffing requirements? What would that mean to you individually? You know, sometimes it's hard enough to manage four associates. How would you manage the equivalent of 40 all dumping work on you for review? In a situation like that, the implications for quality assurance take on a whole new dimension. So I think we're at the threshold of a very exciting time. I don't think it's going to abolish the practice of law, but it's certainly going to transform.
Yeah, I think that that is definitely for sure. And I think that that productivity enhancement is very likely what we will see in terms of dramatically changing the landscape, at least just from my own personal experience using it, because it is the volume of work that can be produced using it is pretty impressive. Obviously, still requires your own editing and thing, but idea generation, and use it to edit the second edition of my first book. I mean, and it was incredibly helpful in that process. And so, you know, what would have taken a lot longer, you know, was probably cut in half, maybe even a third.
I've noticed the same thing. I'm currently writing a book on pricing, and the basic outline of it was something I requested from an AI tool. And it gave me the basic structure to try to focus in on this gigantic topic. And it also gave me a draft. The obsession that chatbot had with cliches, I mean, it's not a competitive legal market. It's a hyper intensely competitive legal landscape. Now, but that aside, it's very useful to help us organize our thoughts, and we're going to be seeing more of it. Sure, there's always some quality issues with it, but it is getting better, and it's focusing the attention of law firms, and particularly small law firms, now on issues of risk management. And how do we manage the risk? We're going to be using this stuff. How do we manage the risks? And that's particularly important for a fast-paced practice like personal.
Yeah, absolutely. So last question as we wrap up, but I think it's a pretty critical question, is given all of your extensive experience in management with law firm operations and organizations, What are some effective strategies for personal injury firms to optimize their operational efficiencies without compromising the quality of service that they're delivering to their clients?
I think there are a couple things that come to mind in that. First of all, and I think you mentioned it in your last phrase. First of all, it's the clients. What can you do to better meet the needs and expectations of each client? And personal injury clients are a breed apart because they haven't suffered the breach of an obscure clause in a contract. They've suffered something really substantial. But understanding what their expectations are for the service, for communication, for paying attention to what's important to them, getting that data is almost as important as getting the numbers, because that helps you to shape your internal operations to better meet client needs and expectations. Now, I said earlier that one of the problems with plaintiff's PI practice is that usually you just have a one-time client. And what you do to orchestrate and organize your operations to really respond to the needs of the client can make that client a marketing force for you in the community. And that is very important, because that's how you can enhance at least the indirect productivity and profitability of that relationship. I think it's all summed up in the words of one of the clients of plaintiff's personal injury firm that we advised a number of years ago. We were doing a client survey, and never forget these words. The client said, "They treated me as if I were the firm's only client." And that's where the operational aspect comes in. It wasn't the result, but it was the way that they were treated.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, the customer experience is incredibly important. I had a guest on the podcast who wrote a whole book on that topic, who happens to be a lawyer, but he came on the podcast and talked extensively about that. I've read the book, Never Lose a Customer Again, by Joey Coleman. And it really is something that more businesses overall should focus on, particularly, you know, plaintiff personal injury firms, because of the fact that most firms depend on former clients to produce referrals for them. That's incredibly important. So, like, what we do typically enhances the experience for the client, because they net more dollars out of their settlement by having experts and professionals negotiate and resolve their out their liens. That's one of the last impressions personal injury client gets when they've left the firm, is how much of that settlement do they get to keep. You know, all these issues are really key. Great insights today. Thank you for that. And if any of our listeners today have questions about anything that you've talked about, wants to learn more about the key concepts that you discussed, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
The best way to get in touch with me is by email, norman.clark@walkerclark.com, or by WhatsApp. Either way, be looking forward to it. I'm also on LinkedIn.
We'll share that information in the show notes for today's episode. Norman, thank you for joining me today. And to all our listeners at Trial Lawyer View, we'll see you on the next episode.
Here is another episode of Trial Lawyer View. We hope you enjoy today's guest and discussion. Tune in to our next episode for more helpful insights from fellow trial lawyers and practice experts. This podcast is brought to you by Synergy. Visit partnerwithsynergy.com to learn more about how Synergy can free your firm to focus on what it does best.